everyone. Welcome back to E-commerce AI, the Revenue Revolution. Today we are joined by a very special guest, Jacoby Zakretsky, the head of IT strategy at Luminos Labs. Jacoby brings a wealth of experience and insight into the technology landscape, helping businesses select, adopt, and improve technology platforms to align with their overarching organizational goals, especially in the commerce and digital experiences. In today's episode, Jacoby will be joining our CEO, Dr. Ari Khan, to discuss the different ways each generation adopts AI in B2B. They will dive into how concept search and image search can transform customer engagement, the impact of a new generation with different expectations, and what is leapfrogging. So I'm going to let you two take it away now.
Thank you, Kristen. Jacoby, great to see you.
You as well, Ari. Appreciate that, Kristen. Thank you.
Well, we've been partners for a long time, and we've done a lot of implementations together, and things are really getting exciting over the last year or so with everything that's happening in artificial intelligence. I feel like it's really a paradigm shift in the way that individuals shop online, the way that we implement things, that there's going to be a lot of new emerging opportunities over the next over the next probably 12 months and for the next decade, just continually, but a lot of new stuff. What are some of the interesting things that you're bumping into?
Yeah, one of the interesting things, you know, about AI, especially in general, is just its, I don't want to say commoditization, but its utilization within the various industries that we work in, both mutually here. And so, you know, Jensen Huang from NVIDIA, president and CEO, said the first step of this is generally just developing the technology. That's step one. You know, we're doing that. HawkSearch is doing that in their product. NVIDIA is certainly doing that and powering some solutions there. But step two is applying the technology. So actually applying the technology within whatever solution or problem statement it is. And we're there, you know, in that wave of a number of things. But then step three is using. So there's a big difference in like actually applying the technology and then using it. So people, hands, you know, on the keyboard, mouse, touchscreen, whatever. And so one of the fascinating things about this topic, Ari, is that AI is not just like by itself doesn't do much. Okay. Like it requires input and then it spits out output depending on how you're utilizing it, like with Gen AI or whatever. So I think the fascinating part of this is just, it's number one, cross like functional use here across different, you know, HR, sales, operations, marketing, but also it's vertical use within a business process. So it's not like you're going into this saying, I'm going to use AI and it's going to solve everything everywhere all at once. It's like you're going to pepper it in various spots, almost like it's oxygen in a way, right? Like it's not like this one single thing that's going to perpetuate and be the focal point. It's kind of like supplemental in nature, right?
It is, you know, and it's really interesting when you think about those three different aspects, you know, create the technology, implement it, and then actually use it. And it's a feedback loop. And it's almost impossible to anticipate the different use cases, the way that people are going to interact, the expectations people are going to have, and being at the forefront and working with real world customers and seeing what they're actually doing and continually tuning it is the key to really making a successful implementation.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise, without that feedback loop, it's almost like you get stuck. It's like, well, that didn't work. And then what do you do from there? Is it considered a failure or is it more of like fall forward kind of a situation? To be determined, especially in individual businesses on how they adopt it. But I think that's the fun part of it is like it never ends. It's perpetual kind of a situation. Mm-hmm.
It is. Yeah. Well, there's some significant social dynamics that are happening, and it's going to happen and collide with or really build upon all of the technical opportunities in AI. Hmm. And I saw a stat recently that 73% of all B2B online purchases will happen with millennials, which is a dramatic shift from just 3 or 4 years ago. It's like the old guard is shifting out and the new group is coming in. And these B2B sites have been laggards. And at the same time that they need to implement a lot of the things that the millennials take for granted in their B2C experience, AI comes along and changes even the B2C side of it. And we're going to have this sort of wave from both directions that are going to really create opportunities to change what happens in B2B. Last time you and I were talking, we were talking about leapfrogging and how South America didn't have any telephones at all. It was all rural areas, and they leapfrogged the landline and just put in some cell towers, and all of a sudden, whatever, Ecuador has a bunch of cell phones and people have never owned a regular phone before. Well, the B2B distributors, B2B websites are going to leapfrog what we've become accustomed to in the traditional B2C shopping experience into this intelligent AI experience with their new users, with the new technologies. And I think that this creates an opportunity for all the B2B companies to suddenly get up to speed, embrace this new generation that's going to be doing their purchasing for them, and avoid having to make that initial investment in the first place.
Yeah, one of the fascinating things, Ari, about, you know, the telephone reference, and also with Gen AI and AI in particular, is just its general accessibility. Like, the barrier to entry is very low at this juncture with it, right? And so suddenly you don't have to have millions of dollars to have that thing. Like, I can just buy a $5 a month, you know, ChatGPT or whatever subscription, and I have the power amongst almost everyone else at the same time. So it changes the playing field in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And so I think one of the key components here is just the general accessibility is so widespread, where to get into this kind of thing, it's kind of like drop shipping, right? Like, when COVID started happening, everyone could become a drop shipper. Like, everyone could.
Right.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah. Out of your basement, out of your living room.
Yeah. And AI is a lot of ways. So, you know, if you're extremely knowledgeable in your area of the business, you do find with AI, because of just its crowdsourcing capabilities of searching the internet, you suddenly have, if you're a newcomer to an industry, a lot of the knowledge now that maybe the experts have. Not all of it, you know, because there's maybe surface level things going on. But I think that's a major component, is just the ease of access to this technology has opened up a lot of doors to folks or groups who didn't really have that such a thing before. Maybe it was economical holding them back, or access to information. So I think that's enabling a lot of the leapfrogging to happen, and not kind of hamstringing folks.
Yep. You know? And it's going to accelerate it, because unlike if you required a tremendous number of resources to implement anything on AI, and only the large companies could do it, who move glacially slow, who have to have giant consensus before reorganizing some big group, you're going to have lots of smaller companies like Luminos and Bridgeline, that are going to have very tight relationships with their customers, understand their customers' really needs, and be able to quickly bring this very powerful technology into a very specific custom vertical solution that will directly solve those problems. And then you get innovations happening all the way across the world with lots and lots of small companies as opposed to just a few big ones. And that's going to just create a tidal wave of really fast growth, and that UX is going to mature super quickly.
So a question there, Ari. So if we were to look at, generally speaking, if you were a smaller company who didn't have access to certain things because of maybe capital or whatever it was, you may say, well, we're not like the big guys. We don't have the funds to apply, right? We can't do those things. So is that not a valid excuse anymore? And where you could say maybe, right, well, we're a smaller company who can move faster and we're not beholden to organizational tar, you know, things like that.
Right, right.
Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, I do think so. And I think that the larger companies are going to consider their own organization and perhaps create smaller, more nimble groups that don't require redeploying tens of millions of dollars of personnel and infrastructure every time they want to do something new, and create their own, you know, sub-company entrepreneurial boutique departments, or whatever they'll be called. But if you're going to be Microsoft, it's a pretty old company now, but they're known for being relatively nimble, for being one of the largest companies in the world. They're going to need to really reorganize and think about, what are they? Are they really a collection of lots of smaller companies? Are they the master of a brand with lots of partnerships? Because you don't need to push forward 500 people and $10 million worth of infrastructure to launch a project today.
Well, okay. So let's take, you know, real quick, I see a lot of companies that are larger, you know, on the enterprise space that do know they move slow, right? They generally know that they move slow because of risk adversity, you know, decision making, et cetera. What I've particularly seen to get the best of both worlds is to almost have like an innovation group spun up inside the company. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit of a wild, wild west. They're allowed to fit outside the norms of like governance and security. Mm-hmm. And like they can't get too crazy here, but they're allowed to have its own authority and kind of do its own experimentation within the enterprise.
Yeah.
To say, you know, and give it its own P&L and everything, right? And so almost having it the best of both ways, but not getting too crazy and moving away from the value proposition too much. So it almost like it allows a startup kind of mentality with inside a big organization that does have funding and processes and people power they could throw behind it. It's been pretty interesting to see, especially we see it in software companies, but even more importantly, in like industrial distribution and manufacturing, we're starting to see that more and more of like, hey, because of the very stat you gave, Ari, that the 73% of B2B purchasers being millennials, well, maybe we should do something rather than just the same thing we've always done. Maybe we should do something different, right? So either A, you spin up your own greenfield company and brand, you know, or you try to do it with inside the organization in an innovation hub, sort of, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Yeah. And you also see a big emergence of corporate VC nowadays as well, with large funds that, you know, I mean, Microsoft put all this money into OpenAI and their corporate VC group. Salesforce has a large corporate VC. Even NVIDIA launched a VC fund recently. And that's one way that they will indirectly innovate by just owning a piece of lots of small companies. But when you get out of that tech space and you get into, we do a lot of business in B2B electrical distributors, right? I mean, they're selling tangible goods, light switches and wires and things like that. Those guys need to think very innovatively as well and to do things like spin up a different user experience for B2B shoppers or warehouse replenishment or filling in details using Gen AI on sparse product catalogs that have holes or incorrect information in them. And all of those capabilities are here. Now, they might not have a bunch of computer engineers in-house that will intuitively know that now some of this stuff can be tackled, but their relationships with system integrators, they need to go to whatever, a Gartner conference or something, and stay at the forefront of that and push the envelope a little bit with smaller teams that can just experiment and either pull it off or fail fast and try something else.
Well, one of the fascinating things here, it's a great point in the B2B space, especially distribution and manufacturing. When I look at distribution, we all see it all the time. There's consolidation happening. You know, there's less and less smaller distributors especially on the brick and mortar side with retail or physical warehouse locations being consumed into the larger entities, right? And so where does that leave us in the future? Well, a part of just the general labor workforce in this industry and that industry in particular is it's aging. And there's 10,000 less of those workers that have, by the way, a huge asset, which is knowledge. And so there's more and more of those folks kind of dropping off. And then where do we go from there? And so when a significant amount of B2B purchasers are millennials, they are looking for product data and product knowledge. And since that industry is so built on relationships, and if the people that are in the relationships are retiring, the cascading effect would tell me we probably need something to replace that. Whether it's a person or technology, that's a decision to be made. But I will say one of the huge benefits here of AI is utilizing the knowledge of the people who have worked in distribution companies for dozens of years, right? They know the 200,000 products like the back of their hand.
Right.
Newer folks don't. Right. Yeah. And so one of the big aspects of HawkSearch and others with Gen AI is number one, helping with that product knowledge. So when I go search for something on, you know, a website, I might not know its SKU by heart, right? Like I just don't know that, but I can kind of describe it by physically seeing it or looking at it. And that may show up in search results. So one of the point I'm making here is I think Gen AI and AI can be used to substitute and supplement that gap of knowledge that will happen here in the coming future. That way the newer, younger folks that are inside sales, outside sales, et cetera, they don't have to feel like they have to memorize a hosted catalog, right, of all the products of the hundreds of thousands of things they sell as a company.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's a really, I think, important example. You've got a bunch of people retiring. They've got knowledge in their head, gigantic catalogs, sparse information that is spread across marketing material, websites, technical docs, white papers, people's brains, and so forth. And that's where both Gen AI and retrieval augmented generation can come together to scan all that information, summarize it so that you can make a search, find summaries as to what this all this data is, and also create a dialogue where, as you make an initial search, if it's not specific enough with Gen AI, you can then automatically ask additional questions to refine the search and find this product that only Tom Jones, who was born in 1932, would have ever been able to find, and he's in the Bahamas with his grandkids.
as he should be. He's probably earned it. You know, that kind of thing. And that's an important aspect of AI that I kind of look at here is, number one, we always think about it used within search for the customer's experience, right? Of like taking a picture or contextual search and, you know, the search results are reading their mind about what they would like. But seriously, more importantly, to help from an adoption standpoint inside your company is using search and AI as an internal sales enablement piece for the folks that, you know, they can't go and attend all the trainings from the different suppliers they have and do all this stuff. They're looking to make sales and help the customer out like today. And the best way to do that is to like take a picture. When I go to like Lowe's or Home Depot, I go in with the thing that I have and say, I don't know what this is, but I need to find this, you know, kind of thing, because it may just be a single screw or nut or whatever, right? And so I think that's a huge aspect here to help alleviate some of the gaps that we'll see, is just having search and AI help with internal enablement just as much as external to the customer side.
And also, you know, some of these industries, especially manufacturing and distributors, they run on very thin margins.
Yeah.
And as people retire, as competitors become more aggressive, they need to be able to cut through a lot of that information very efficiently, find parts, share information, make sales, and so forth. And if they miss the boat with what's happening in AI, their competitors are going to just squeeze them out of there, because there's not enough margin to be second best anymore, especially in those manufacturing style industries.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's a great point. When you're in distribution, I think this is something that, you know, I talk with organizations and ask them what their value proposition is all the time. Because if you're just selling widgets, if you're just selling physical things, there's certainly a lot of people that can do that, especially on the commodity side. And so you do want to provide enough of that, you know, romance copy and, you know, attributes and imagery and all those things to really sell the sizzle. versus just the product. And then there's obviously services that go along with that from an engineering or, you know, energy savings perspective that distribution companies do all the time. But I think that's a big aspect of, if we're just going off of just stuff and price, it's a race to the bottom. You need to provide a little bit more, because competition, some of them certainly will. And so there's an opportunity cost here often. But we go back to the accessibility piece. This stuff is accessible to a lot of people and a lot of companies. It's not blocked out by a bunch. It just comes down to execution at this juncture and being intentional about it, I suppose.
And I expect to see emergent user experience expectations, where if you're not up to date with the expectations of your shoppers, they will go and buy it from somewhere else. And you need to have a partner who's at least implemented enough other distributors and B2B manufacturers and so forth to know, look, there's five ways to do it, but everyone's doing it this way. And your customer's probably going to feel that you're a foreign website and not comfortable if you don't follow this emerging standard. So we're going to implement it like this.
And you kind of have to, in a lot of ways. And it may, you know, you may have to support some legacy things. And that's just a reality of timelines and that percentage of 73%, you know, things like that. But I think you're right. By not doing some of these things, it starts to create a level of like maybe brand or investment on trustworthiness, and like you still have to support maybe the other ways, but with kind of a changing landscape, it seems weird if you don't do some of these things, right? It's one of those like, hey, do they actually care? Because again, if you're hinging on just relationships, I don't know. Like, I that can't be your one shot here. You got to have multiple facets going on.
Yeah. So then the question comes in, do you have to re-implement everything from scratch when it's time to bring your B2B site to the next level? Or are there things that you can focus on first and do it incrementally?
Yeah, we could talk for 3 hours about that. But, you know, I think it's one of those situations where you have to really take note of what ingredients you have in the kitchen this juncture when you're building out that meal, so to speak. And so we're all familiar with the concept of tech debt, right? And so I think if you let the tech debt get too far, the tax does come due. Interest must be paid. And so I think one of those situations where if you've done nothing for a very long time, you might be under a scorched earth situation. Okay.
Well, one thing, and you know, if for you and I, we've been in the software development field for a long time, but if you're a B2B distributor, you might not realize this, is that sometimes it's cheaper and faster to start from scratch, and not just sometimes, a lot of times. So you have to kind of figure that out and have the right trusted partner that can advise you with respect to that. But it's like, okay, great, here we got the other site, and now we're going to work on another one. Just keep that up and running, and we'll launch it all at once, as opposed to keep on Frankensteining this thing and putting a bolt in its neck and this and that, and trying to cheap it out, which just costs more and takes longer, and then you never end up with a really good site sometimes.
Yeah, I think the reality is, if you're going to build a whole new kind of thing while keeping the existing one going, there's a parallel track going on. And listen, nobody ever has enough like time, money, or people with some of this stuff. So when you're doing the parallel thing, it's like, well, I have to support this, I have to keep the lights on of the existing thing, plus build the new house at the same time. How are we going to balance this? And yes, there is a period of like, you know, pull up your pants and, you know, grit it out kind of thing. And, you know, you get through it. But I think that's where, if you can find yourself in a situation where you have your pillars of technology that are very stable, that are very extensible, that, you know, aren't going to back you into a corner, I think those are key. When you have more niche technologies that aren't a huge part of your value proposition and they don't make up a huge part of the user experience, you know, that's okay to kind of put into a corner, and that's all right, because it's not hugely impactful. But, you know, I'm a big fan, Ari, of just supportability and operability with things, because when we're looking at technology and looking at the landscape, you know, coming from the distribution world, there's a lot of technology out there that's really cool. But really the thing that I tend to focus on a lot is, can the team actually use it? Like, can the team actually day to day do their jobs with what they need? And are they going to be happy with using it? Because if your employee is not happy using the platform or software, trust me, it will exude out into maybe a bad customer experience, right? Like in very subtle ways. And so I think that's one of those situations, to your original question. It's always it depends, and you have to evaluate it. But oftentimes when you're looking at technology, you do have to think ahead of time of like, how would we exit this later on? You know, kind of a situation like, if something were to go wrong, how would we exit it? And if that answer is, boy, that would be painful, you really have to look at that, right? Because you don't want to make these big sweeping changes, because it's just like no one ever re-implements a new ERP every year. Like, that's just not a thing. And if it is a thing, boy, a lot of other stuff's going wrong.
So when a B2B distributor, let's say with 500,000 products in a catalog, and maybe they're a $250 million company, so they're a smaller company, when they're coming to Luminos, how do you approach the project? I mean, where do you get started?
Yeah, great question. And so normally it may be, you know, they may be wanting to implement a new e-commerce platform. They may want a new search like HawkSearch. They may be looking for PIM help, whatever it is, something on the digital experience stack, right? Of that spectrum. One of the things I guess I focus on first is, number one, what are we trying to get out of this? What is our measurement of success? And so, usually it's one of three things I try to focus on. So I use this old technique, you know, where it's you have 100 pennies and you have three jars. All right. And you have to pick where you're going to put the 100 pennies between the three jars. You don't get 300 pennies, you get 100. Okay. And so what are we trying to do here? Are we trying to increase our revenue with this, like just straight up net new revenue? Are we trying to convert offline sales to online sales? Or are we generally just trying to improve the user and customer experience, right? And so usually the, you know, someone will say, well, I want to put 100 pennies in all three. Okay, this is representing time and budget, so we can't do that, all right? And so typically what it usually boils down to is one of those three options where they'll put most of the pennies or not. And I would say for the most part, it's just improve the customer and user experience, because if you do that correctly, the other things will happen. But I would say, you know, to answer the question, it's focusing on what's the overall business goal we're trying to achieve. Because if we're leading with a technology solution, we're kind of all just guessing at that juncture. And yes, we can make it technically work, but it's different working for the business, right? So while we can make the integrations happen and implement the technology, and we can sit back and cross our arms and say, look, team, we did it, bits and bytes are working, did anything happen to the business successfully or not? Right. Yeah, like that's kind of like the old engineer going, saying, I don't know, it works though. Right. Okay. Does it work for the business though? So I think leading with that to identify the problem statement is really good. And frankly, if an organization doesn't know its cardinal direction, I think that's something that's up for discussion at that point of saying, before you spend any money with whoever, we need to define a general problem statement or like North Star first.
Right. Okay. That's so great partnering right there, right? To be able to say, listen, I'm not just going to start writing a bunch of code and doing whatever I think you might want to do or whatever I like doing or whatever I'm good at or something.
Yeah.
Let's get a business direction. Let's have metrics. Is it revenue? Mm-hmm. Is it customer experience? What are going to be the ramifications of success or failure? And let's be realistic. You only got 100 pennies. Let's not just, you know, close our eyes to the real budget and then find out halfway through we're out of money and everybody's unhappy.
Yeah, I really enjoy organizations that focus on things that are non-revenue sometimes. And I know that's scary because you may look at things with an example on ROI and things like that. But I don't know. A lot of people make ROI things up all the time. Okay, mm-hmm. So when organizations say, my kind of success metric is utilization, they're onto something, right? They're onto something with like, if someone's using something more, there's bound to be a correlated after effect of something good happening, right? They're not using it because they don't like it. Maybe because generally speaking, customers aren't forced to use this distribution website, for example, right? They have other options in a lot of ways. Not that you want that, but because you see an increase in utilization, something must be going right. And so the other part that I would mention is, and you probably see this a lot, I think a lot of technology is implemented incorrectly, where unfairly the technology may get blamed for a maybe business or people skill set problem, right? And so I think that's something really big to evaluate is the technology can do all the things you want, actually. It's just not being driven correctly or being configured correctly, et cetera. So I think that's a big thing because you may implement a new technology saying, oh, we're going to bring in this new vendor, but you end up with the same problems, right? And so then it's a look in the mirror kind of a conversation happening. And so those are tough pills to swallow sometimes, but required.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's true. Cool. All right. So we've done a lot of projects together. We've seen a lot of success. I love that. What's the best way for somebody who needs to either improve their site, figure out what their goals are, or build something new? How do they get in touch with Luminos?
Well, number one, go to our website, luminouslabs.com, or alternatively, look us up on LinkedIn or find me, you know, send me a direct message as well. I'll be available. And so we just start talking shop and discovering, you know, what are the problems? What are the issues? My background is, you know, as a VP of IT at a distributor for a number of years. So I've kind of seen it all from, you know, the back office ERPs all the way up to the digital side. And so just glad to talk shop and figure out where, you know, where the opportunities are in your business to improve things. Sometimes it's through technology. Sometimes it's just organizational design. And sometimes it's just you know, therapy sessions in a lot of ways, right? Ah,
and so, and you know, that's a really important point that we didn't really touch on. We're running low on time, but you've been on both sides of the equation in the distributor world. That's a very unique set of
Yeah, points. If I didn't have like blonde hair, it probably would be gray at this juncture, you know. So,
well, if you want somebody who can feel your needs and has been in your seat, then Jacoby's your guy.
We can laugh, we can cry, we can smile together, you know.
That's awesome. Well, thank you very much, Jacoby. This has really been a lot of fun and very educational. Much appreciated.
Yeah, as always, Ari, appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Ari and Jacoby, and thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time.